John, are you on the air?
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I can hear you, Haynes.
Cool. Welcome to the Earth Mystery Show, and welcome back to Nevada City, Grass Valley area when you come back. I tell people all the time on this show that if you're going to New York, there's a number of different ways you can get there. The first one is go get a map. The second way is just get in your car and start driving east and ask along the way, where's New York? Am I on the right road? The third way, I guess, would be to ask someone who's been there, would you write down a plan for me? How do I get to New York? And the fourth way is to have never heard of New York, start heading off in a direction that you don't even know where you're going and expect to get to a place that you don't even know. And I think that's where most of us are as far as this word enlightenment goes, or waking up goes. People want to wake up, but they have no clue. So you're a guy who's woken up. Let's talk about how you do it. How does one decide even what they want?
Well, you know, actually, it's a real good question. How does one decide what they want? We spend a lot of time trying to decide what we want, but what we want is... what we want really in this life, in my experience, is to know what we are. And for all of our life, we are like the guy who just sets out not having the slightest clue even that they are going to New York City, much less how to get there. And we try to figure out what we are by means of trying to become something that's satisfactory. We monitor our thoughts, our feelings, our relationships, the way people relate to us, what we have come to conclude about what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad, and are incessantly working on trying to build a persona that's satisfactory, that will finally satisfy my need to be what I should be. What's possible is to see that that's what we're doing, and to see that, in fact, we already are what we are, and all we really need to do is see what that is. And this is the self-inquiry of Ramana Maharshi. It is my view and my experience and my sense that all spiritual teachings, without exception, so far as I can tell, have at their core the insight that all individual and collective human suffering and misery flows from a false belief about what we are. They may express it differently depending on the culture and vocabulary in which they appear, but pretty much all of them have that as their core insight. They may call it misidentification or ego identification or God knows what, but all agree that the central problem of human suffering has to do with a misunderstanding, a false belief about what I am. The offering that comes from Ramana is that the only way to solve that problem, the problem of misidentification, is to find the truth of what I am. And further, that this finding the truth of what I am is profoundly simple and easy, if only we will look in the right place. So what I always have to speak about, I don't talk about much of anything else anymore, is the possibility in all cases and all times of seeing the actual reality of my nature. Now, the miraculous thing about this, the simplicity and the power of this, is that you don't have to do anything else. You don't have to abandon any practices, not even the practices of trying to fix yourself. You don't have to abandon any false ideas. That doesn't work. You don't have to do anything except repeatedly, whenever it occurs to you, turn your attention to the experience of being that you are, and all else will be taken care of. And that's what I have to offer.
Well, the word belief is one of those things that nobody thinks that they are plagued with beliefs, and it's so easy to see other people's beliefs about the story of who they are, and it's so difficult to look at yourself and say, well, my story isn't a belief, my story is the real thing.
Right.
How does one separate the story of who I am from who I, with a capital I, am?
Well, first of all, to see that what I believe myself to be is a story. Obviously, I think that my story is the real truth of what I am, and everybody else's story isn't. But the fact is, all know that what I believe myself to be is this story about me, this endlessly unfolding story that consists in thoughts, relationships, memory, hopes, projections, good experiences, bad experiences, good emotions, bad emotions, and so forth. And it is easy for anyone to see that what I am doing with my life, by and large, is trying to fix that story, trying to make it, I know what I need to be, I know what I want to be, I know what the story should look like, and what I'm trying to do is make the story look like I know it should be. Now, the offering of Ramana Maharshi, I mean, if we are happy, then there's no need to do anything. If we are unhappy and dissatisfied, then the solution to that dissatisfaction in the teachings of all spiritual traditions is to be finished with misidentification, to be finished with the idea that I am the story. Belief is invisible. You know, you're right. Belief is, nobody can see a belief. But we can certainly see what we do with our lives. And we can certainly at least entertain the possibility that in this moment, it's absolutely possible for me to just decline to look at the story for a second and instead just let myself experience the background, the permanent background of being that's here, the presence that's here, that I am. Now, the point of this is not to do this in order that the story can resolve itself and be fixed and be clean and pure and so forth. Stories are not. Stories change. Stories are what they are. The point of this is to be finished with the idea that that's me and to be finished with the suffering and the internal warfare that flows from that belief.
When you mentioned the suffering and internal warfare, the first thing that comes to my mind is the picture of all these Muslims rioting about this cartoon affair.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, what a silly story. That's just crazy. They're killing each other, they're rioting, they're hurting people about a two-dimensional drawing on a piece of paper. Isn't that silly? And yet, that's my belief from my point of view, and so easy to see their beliefs going awry, going nuts. And yet I'm sure there's examples in our lives where we are, where someone from a different point of view would look at our lives and say, that's so silly, that's a total, it's just like the people rioting over cartoons. And yet we don't see it because our beliefs are so wrapped around us, that story is so wrapped around us that the alternative, the looking within, doesn't share the same excitement as the story.
Yeah, well, and actually the story isn't really wrapped around us, we are wrapped around it.
Right.
It appears within us. But part of the story of what I am includes my opinion and my relationship with what I believe everybody else is, like stupid for rioting around two-dimensional cartoons. That's part of the story of what I am. And it's something that is either satisfactory or not satisfactory to me. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But that's part of the story of me. The inclination to see see what's wrong with everybody else is part of what I believe myself to be.
Right. My wife, Catalina's here. I think you know Catalina. She's just walked in and sat down. She wanted to say hi to you.
Hi, Catalina.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm very well.
Nice to hear you again.
Likewise.
I remembered one of the first platforms I went with you, I went of yours, and you said to me during the break about enlightenment, you kind of whispered and you said, it's not what you think it is. And I always remembered that, and I didn't quite understand at that time because I had the stereotype version of enlightenment with all the bells and whistles. And I'm just now starting to get a sense of what you were referring to. And you kept saying it's very subtle and it's very different than what I thought. And I appreciate that.
You know, I was talking to Haynes about one of the insights that is common to all spiritual traditions is the insight that all of the problems and suffering in human existence flow from a false belief about what we are. There's another thing that is common to maybe all spiritual traditions, and that is that enlightenment is a foolish thing to pursue, since according to all of them, you already are what you're seeking, just as you are. And that anything that's done to attain what you already are is more work on the story of me, more work on what I should be feeling. You know, for most of our lives, we do this within the context of ordinary material existence. And when we stumble upon the idea of a spiritual solution, we take the same strategies and skill sets that we acquired that did us no good whatsoever prior to spiritual, prior to discovering spiritual ideas, and bring them into the spiritual realm. So now, instead of looking maybe for the perfect relationship that will fix everything, or the perfect life situation that will fix everything, now we look for the perfect enlightenment that will fix everything. Some new state that will transform and transcend all the stupidity of my mind and wipe it all out. But the great ones who have come to us throughout the ages have told us, without exception, that you already are that. You already are enlightenment itself. That Ramana puts it this way. Ramana says, the only thing standing between you and self-realization, which of course is just another way of saying enlightenment, the only thing standing between you and self-realization is the belief that you are not already fully realized just as you are. But nothing changed, and nothing kept from changing.
Indeed.
So the obvious and completely overlooked possibility is to see that the only solution to a misunderstanding of what I am is to find the truth of what I am. And what could be easier? I mean, you're here. You're never absent. It is self-evident. Your nature is self-evident. And the invitation of self-inquiry is just whenever you think of it, whenever it occurs to you, to just bring your attention to this experience of being you. Just for a second. Just for a moment. Repeatedly. And Ramana's promise and my understanding and my experience is that everything else will be taken care of. That the consciousness of the realization that you already are rises like a tide within the mind stream. And even without your noticing it. Since your awakeness is your nature, ordinary, just as you are. And the thoughts and the story and the emotions and the desires and the aversions and all of those things that constitute the mind stream have nothing to do with you. They have no effect on you. You know that. You never change. You're never affected. You don't move. You are pure and clear. Permanent.
Indeed. Our guest today is John Sherman. I'm Haynes Ely. My wife, Catalina, is here with us. The difference between seeing you in person and being on the radio, I don't know if there is a difference. I think that you transmit whatever you transmit the way just by talking. But I've always thought it's good to be in person live, to touch people who are enlightened, who wake up, and to be in their presence. There does seem to be some kind of a transmission that goes on, whether it's between the words or just because of the energy of the being that you're with. But I highly recommend actually sitting with John all day. And what can I say except there's a recommendation. How's that, John?
I don't know if there's a difference either, but there is satsang, which is what these meetings are called, is a relationship. It's a relationship that appears between the teacher and everybody that's present, that is alive, and, well, it is alive, and that is, there is some use to be had in reading things and listening to recordings of these meetings and so forth, or listening to people on the radio, but the alive relationship that's present there in a personal, physical meeting is, affects all, and not just the seekers, but it affects all. And I don't know whether you were asking me if there's a difference or not, but
no, I'm saying to my own self there is a difference. I'm saying that to the listener there is a difference, although I think the listeners can get a lot from hearing. I think being in your presence, I think just being there, like you say, the satsang, there is something that goes back and forth that's really worth doing. Most people, as I mentioned on the beginning of the show, they have an idea of something that they want because life may not give them all that they think they need. And that want is a sort of an amorphous want, but there's no goal to it. It's a, I want, I'm missing something, and there's no goal. So I think being with teachers like yourself or hearing teachers like yourself helps people to say, well, I want that. That there's something there that I sense in that person that I want. And yet trying to describe what that is, I think, impossible. You referred to it, you know, as the finding the true self or the real self or that self that's experiencing all this, that's experiencing this story. But I'm not sure how you transmit, even by talking, what that real self is that a person can experience right this minute listening.
Well, you can't. The only way to, and I really don't use terms like real self or true self. There's only you. It's just you. There's nothing else here but you. And there's no way that anyone can show you or tell you what you are. You are here. You are present to yourself at all times. You are never absent. So the best that can be done is to encourage you to look, to see what it feels like to be you. Just whenever you can. And that is the invincible method. That's the sword that cuts through it all. It is not what we have come to expect in spiritual terms, like the lightning bolt that fixes everything and changes everything. There's nothing about you to be changed. All that's needed is to see what you are. Just that. And seeing the actuality of your nature eradicates all the false ideas about what you are. It doesn't eradicate the movements of the mind. It doesn't eradicate the way the personality acts and interacts and so forth. But it eradicates that fundamental false idea of what I am that I don't even know is here, as you pointed out earlier. I don't even know that belief is present. I know that I am this history and this story and these thoughts and these emotions and these desires and so forth. And I want to change it. I say, that's a false trail. That's like trying to find New York when you never heard of New York. Find out what you are. Nobody can give you that. Nobody can describe you to yourself. You are here. You are ever present.
Do you find that when people wake up to that ever present here, that they find a disgust with their previous beliefs or a sense of, oh my God?
No, usually my experience with people, and I have, just yesterday we had an afternoon with a group of people here in Southern California, and a couple of people who have been with me for a long time spoke to report about their own experience, and there's neither disgust nor much interest whatsoever in what goes on in what you used to believe yourself to be. It just goes on. If there's disgust, that's okay. If there's not, that's okay, too. Are you disgusted with a story that you read because you find out that it's not true?
There's some stories I prefer not to read, yeah.
Yes.
Well, there's one approach to waking up, and that's, Jed McKenna has written about spiritual autolysis, where one just examines every belief and just chews it and chews it until they spit out the bone and there's nothing left. And eventually one goes through all the beliefs that there are, and there's what's left is you.
Of course, my sense is that there's no end to what you're not. There's the mind is infinitely capable of creating new, complicated, and plausible explanations for you and what you are. So and it's okay, but the direct method is to find out what you are, not to find out what you're not.
Various spiritual traditions say that if you do this meditation or say this mantra or do this fasting or do this yoga, etc., that will aid one to become enlightened. And what would you say about that? Is it just perpetuating the story, or from your experience, do you think things like that set the stage so that one may therefore realize one's true self?
Well, in the first place, the premise that anything can bring you to enlightenment strikes me as being ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
since all agree that you already are what you seek.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see that there's anything useful or either useful or wrong about any of the practices that people do, whether it's meditation or mantra or visualization or pranayama or any of it. And I don't see that there's any need to make a choice to discard those practices in favor of some other practice. What I see is that all of the practices and all of the things that we do, whether they are overtly spiritual or not, are part of the story of what I am. And it's okay. Nothing needs to be done about that. What I say, my experience is that continue with all your practices. Just whenever you can, whenever it occurs to you, whenever you think of it, whenever you remember to do so, take one moment to taste the reality of what you are. Not in order to get rid of the practices, and not in any way because the practices support or are helpful in that, but just to see the truth, just in this moment. And it's my experience and the experience of many people that I have been with for a long time that repeated inquiry, that repeated turning of attention to the absolute, indescribable, real presence that you are, over time, the tide of realization rises in consciousness. And before you even notice it, what is predominant is this knowing that's always here. The practices may continue, they may not. They may continue or may not, whether you do this or not. That's the nature of the story. It changes. To my mind, they are pretty much irrelevant, one way or the other. You're okay.
Well, you're arriving into the home of everything New Age in Nevada City, Grass Valley. I mean, we've got the meditators, we've got the every different religious organization you can think of. We've got all the diets and all the health foods, and so I hope everybody does continue their stuff that they're doing. It doesn't just stop and be, because the economy would collapse if they did.
Well, you can't, so far as I know, you can't not be, no matter what else you're doing. That's what the background of what you are is.
I think what Kalina was alluding to is some of these people are putting so much effort into the yogic practices or the diets or the pranayama, whatever they're doing. They're doing it because they're going to be enlightened if they do it enough and hard enough. And they'll get what's coming to them if they just keep doing it. And the phone lines are ringing up. I must have touched a raw spot. So let me see if we have some listeners that want to say hello to you.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the air on KVMR.
Yeah, I've kind of sensed that all religions are kind of, they're portions of a recognition of truth, beauty, and goodness. That truth, beauty, and goodness are a reflection of what we call spiritual, and the real work is a consistency of connection, and that's kind of my sense of it. It's interesting.
Thanks, caller.
Thank you.
Well, the other callers didn't stay on. You're still there, Don?
Yes, I'm still here. I mean,
oh, here comes the other caller. I'll get the other caller in, then we'll have a twofer, and then we can answer both of them at once.
Okay.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Hi, I just found this excellent book, and I'm wondering if Don has read it yet. It's called Halfway Up the Mountain.
No, I haven't.
It's The Heir of Premature Claims to Enlightenment.
Halfway Up the Mountain.
Yeah.
We'll have to look into that one. John hasn't read it, so thank you, caller.
Yeah.
Well, John, Halfway Up the Mountain you haven't read, and the other caller mentioned world religions. I have no use for world religions. I have to throw my belief system out there right now, that world religions are out there to control people's lives and not to encourage anybody to wake up. I've never met any religion or encountered any religion whose focus was on waking up.
Right, but what is possible to see is that religions and it cannot be overlooked, the power they have over human consciousness. And the source of their power is that from what I can see, all religions have at their core the same insight. And what religion is a reaction to that truth. It's a way of trying to control it and use it and do something with it. In that way, they are no different from the individual human mind. The individual human mind, the truth is clear, always clear. It's always here. And most of what we do that is in relation to this reality that you are is to try to do something about it, to control it, to make it mean something, to make it mine, to make it not true, to make it something. And religions do the same thing on a huge scale. They are in reaction to the truth that has appeared somewhere in their history within them, at their heart.
And that truth is the same thing we've been talking about this whole hour.
the truth is that there is nothing but you. That you are here. And that all of the drama and the melodrama of religion and anti-religion and wanting and not wanting is irrelevant. It has no meaning. It cannot touch you in any way. Never has touched you. And that is unacceptable to the human mind. And religion is the human mind writ large.
Indeed.
It is a horror story.
Can you imagine selling your story, what we're talking about today, on a TV outreach ministry drive-in show? Or I'm just wondering if you have a big pinky ring and a bouffant hairdo to go with the story.
No, I don't.
John, now we know a lot of people who are going to India for this 21-day training that's very expensive. And
I've read about that.
And is there anything from your perspective? What is that? Apparently, it's like a Shakti pod of awakening Kundalini and people becoming enlightened. But I don't know. I have questions about it.
Well, what I say is this: you are already awake. You may or may not. There may or may not appear within you experiences of bliss and oceanic consciousness and hell, all kinds of huge experiences, Kundalini rising and the crown chakra opening up. These experiences may or may not appear to you. You may or may not be able to seek them out from those who have Shakti that can trigger these experiences. But the experiences themselves, they were not here, and then they are here, and then they will not be here.
Like Papaji's Krishna.
Huh?
Like Papaji's Krishna.
Right. Exactly like Papaji and Krishna. What remains always is you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't... You know, if people want to pay tens of thousands of dollars and go to India to get big experiences, I don't have any objection to that. What's that to me? When those experiences are finished, those people, those who have sought them out, will remain unchanged, unaffected, unmoved by any of it. The experiences appear in them, and they disappear in them.
Mm-hmm.
And what is worth seeking is what is permanent.
Mm-hmm.
What comes and goes, comes and goes. If it didn't, consider this, if it didn't, if these enlightenment experiences remained permanently, then they would be ordinary, would they not? They would be indistinguishable from any other.
I remember once I asked you, if I awakened right now, would I be able to drive? And you said yes.
Yes.
I think that's what Catalina is alluding to, and what you just talked about, is that there's so many people who are spending money and they're spending lifetimes of work, effort, to effort their way into enlightenment or to buy their way into enlightenment. And your message is, it's okay if you want to, but you're already there. So why are you doing it?
That's exactly right.
But I think
I don't care about people. If they go get high, if they seek out any experiences they want, what's that to me? But if what you want is to be finished with the internal warfare that characterizes your life and that characterizes your desire to get these experiences themselves and get rid of the experiences that you don't want, what you want is to be finished with that, then in my experience there's only one way. And that is to find out what you are already. And whatever happens after that, who cares?
And to help with that inquiry, John Sherman's going to be here. in Nevada City and Grass Valley this coming weekend. There's a public meeting with John on Friday, March 7th. That's this coming Friday at 7 p.m. at the Banner Grange at 12629 McCourtney Road. And the phone number for more information on that is 274-3435. That meeting's going to last approximately 2 hours, and John will talk to you in person. And he'll be here all day. You can talk to him and have satsang with him all day from 10:30 in the morning to 6 p.m. on Saturday, March 4th, at the Sierra Center for Meditation and Well-Being, which is at 10260 Ridge Road in Nevada City. The phone numbers to make a reservation for that are toll-free 877-540-1056, 877-540-1056. There's a website for you, John, which is www.riverganga.org. That's riverganga.org. And you can look on that website for the events, for the Nevada City events, if you want to sign up for that by web. It's been really great having you on the Earth Mystery Show, and the phone's ringing. I'm going to let one more caller sneak in. Hopefully it's that guy whose cell phone didn't work.
Okay.
Caller, you're... Oh, I hate that. Somebody hangs up just as you get them on. Ear trauma. Anyway, I'm sure that the public would love to be with you, and it's so nice talking to you on the phone. And Kathleen has something she wanted to say to you.
You make it sound so simple when you say, just realize who you are. And perhaps it is that simple. And yet, there are many of us who have had this spiritual yearning all of our lives that feel like we want to do something to realize who we are. And it's like the meditations we've been given were things that we were told that would help us, you know, to realize who we are. But you make it sound so simple, like there is nothing to do, nowhere to go, just to be. And is there any tip you can give to any of us how to realize who we are? You've talked about the inquiry. Is there anything else you could say?
Come hear John. I'm saying come hear you in person. But go ahead and give her the secret in one sentence.
The secret is this. Catalina, you are here, are you not?
Yes.
You don't doubt that, do you?
No.
You're absolutely certain of that?
Yes.
Why are you so certain? What's the present experience that makes it impossible for you to doubt that you are here? If you will put your attention there just for a second, that's the truth of what you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's your actual nature. It can't be described. It can't be given to you or taken away from you. And it is actually even simpler than it sounds when we talk about it. It is profoundly simple. And the mystery is why we miss it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no mystery to you. You are ever present. The mystery is how we can miss it. And I tell you the truth, that if you will just repeatedly, whenever it occurs to you, taste that certainty of being that is your nature, everything else will be taken care of. It doesn't matter what other practices you participate in at the same time. None of that is of any consequence to you. The only thing that matters is that moment when you meet yourself directly. And that'll take care of everything. It takes time. There is no immediate eradication of this false belief about what you are. But it is sure and certain. And if you do that, that it will happen that you, that this occurs to you spontaneously. Irresistibly, all the time.
Thanks, John. With that, we've got to end our hour.
Thank you, John.
And Catalina says, thank you, John.
What a great pleasure talking to you, Haynes.
Yes.
Catalina.
Thank
nice
you so
talking
much.
To you again.
I hope I see you this weekend.
I hope the public is there in droves. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Many blessings.
Bye.